Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dan Snow's History Hit. You've all heard of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, I've got a much more interesting podcast for you now. I've got the Pirates of the Chesapeake Bay, that glorious stretch of water, nearly an inland sea that stretches up, tentacles reaching as far as the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Chesapeake Bay was such a vital area of economic importance in the colonial period, in the early republic, a place of exchange, of trade, goods such as sugar, tobacco, enslaved African people arriving to and leaving from the middle colonies. As a result, it attracted the attention of pirates. I'm really happy to have Jamie Goodall on the podcast. She's such a great speaker, and she talked me through the Pirates of the Chesapeake Bay. This is one of the weekly live Zoom podcast records. If you're a subscriber to History Hit TV, you get to join for free. If you want to become a subscriber to History Hit TV, join the Zoom call or just watch the Netflix for History, hundreds of history documentaries, best in the world. Please just go to historyhit.tv, use the code POD1, P-O-D-1, and then you'll get a month for free, and then you'll get a month for just £1, euro, or dollar. Please go and check it out. In the meantime, everyone, here's Jamie Goodall. Jamie, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Well, I'm excited because we've got pirates, we've got Chesapeake Bay. We don't talk about Chesapeake Bay very much in the UK because that was the site of Britain's catastrophic naval defeat at the hands of the French, which is tough, and led directly to American independence. So that was a bad day in the office for Team UK, but Team GB, I should say, back then. Let's start with, what's the definition of a pirate in your work?
So for me, and I guess for most everyone, piracy is a matter of perspective. So depending on who you were and which side of the conflict you found yourself on, pirates were called many different things. They might be corsairs or buccaneers, or privateers. So I understand pirates to be those whose primary purpose was to disrupt commerce, specifically via waterways like oceans, seas, and rivers. But I also think pirates operated on land, maybe to a lesser degree, but I always think of Sir Henry Morgan and his sack of Portobello, for example. And so there's a fine line between piracy and privateering, but that's sort of how I understand pirates.
And there's, you know, Sir Francis Drake wasn't shy of going ashore a little bit as well and wrecking shop. So, and what kind of period are we talking about, the privateers, corsairs, pirates in the Chesapeake?
So primarily we're looking at from about 1630 to, I would say the 1790s for pirates specifically, but in terms of the ways in which privateers operated, of course they would have been considered pirates by their, adversaries. They were very active during the American Revolution, the War of 1812, the American Civil War, all the way through to the Oyster Wars. And, the Oyster Wars don't end until 1959.
Is the Chesapeake geography very important? Does that lend itself to piracy, or is it important in terms of just the major cities, the major ports that it serves?
I think both. So the Chesapeake Bay region specifically encompasses Maryland and Virginia, and it extends about 200 miles from Havre de Grace, Maryland in the north, all the way to Virginia Beach, Virginia in the south. And it's a prime location for the economy of early America, especially. You have Baltimore and Fells Point. You have Richmond and Williamsburg in Virginia. So those are pretty prominent areas of economic activity, which makes them prime targets for piracy.
And also, there are, if you look at it on the map, it's an astonishing landscape. I mean, is there a sense in which there are places to hide as well? Are there local tides? Is it a good place to intercept if you know those waters?
Absolutely. There's tons of inlets and islets throughout the Chesapeake Bay, tributaries leading into rivers. So it was a really great place for pirates who understood the geography quite well. They could navigate into some of those areas and escape the larger ships that were coming after them.
The piracy just grew up alongside those ports and those settlements that you mentioned, or was there a real starting point?
So the major starting point was actually a land dispute between individuals in Maryland and Virginia about where the border between the two states was. So we have William Claiborne, and he set up shop in Maryland, but Virginia claimed that the property was actually Virginia. And so there's some piracy going back and forth where they're attacking the ships coming in and out of Claiborne's property. Because he was very involved in trade, particularly with the indigenous populations of the region. And so that's sort of the first recorded incident of piracy in the Chesapeake Bay.
What's the cash crop? I mean, are we talking tobacco here? Are we talking trade? What is the thing they're going for?
Yeah, so the economy of the Chesapeake is based primarily on the region's accessibility, and tobacco in particular. Access to fresh water and fertile soil made the region agriculturally quite productive, specifically with tobacco. Production of tobacco, of course, boomed after John Rolfe brought back a particularly sweeter strain of seeds from his voyage to Tobago back to Virginia in 1612. So throughout the 1600s to the early 1700s, large-scale tobacco plantations really started to pop up along the rivers and shorelines of Virginia and Maryland. To give you an example, on the lower western shore of Maryland, a small group of gentry held plantations ranging from about 100 acres all the way up to 5,400 acres. And on average, individual plantations were about 1,000 acres in size.
And in the colonial period, were the jurisdictions, or perhaps afterwards, but were the sort of divided jurisdictions of Maryland, Virginia, were those significant? I mean, could you, if you had a little boat and scudded out into the Chesapeake and stole some stuff and then went back to Maryland, could the people of Virginia kind of not really get hold of you? How did that work?
It was difficult to prosecute across those sort of colonial lines, just because the ways in which the different courts handled everything. And so, and it also, you know, if you stole something from Virginia, for example, and made your way back into Maryland, it might be very difficult to find you.
What about the French? What about the Spanish? I mean, in terms of the overlay with the local conditions, local piracy, and then also with the French and Spanish and other nations licensed by their governments, I guess, to attack British and colonial shipping.
Yeah, so one of my favorite pirates, I can't think of his name off the top of my head right now, but he was a French pirate who operated in the Chesapeake Bay region, and he was very keen on tobacco ships in particular. And so the Chesapeake Bay area did deal quite a bit with French incursions specifically, less so, at least in my research, with Spanish incursions. I think that happened more, yes, Louis Guitar, thank you to Mark from... So Louis Guitar operated in the Chesapeake Bay, and he was a Frenchman, but I think a lot of the Spanish piracy, or at least the conflicts with the Spanish, are happening more towards Florida.
So you mentioned Louis Guitar in the book, and he appears to be one of your favorites, if that's not an inappropriate way of putting it. Tell me more about his career.
So he didn't have a very long career, but he had a pretty violent career. And it was very prolific, in its, even though it was very short. In a single week, he attacked at least 3 to 4 ships, which is quite rare to be able to attack that many ships at a time. And as far as we're aware, he made away with his loot without much incident.
Did he return to the Chesapeake, or did he eventually get caught?
He eventually got caught. Louis Guitart and his men tried to get the king's pardon, but the king was feeling less than generous. So unfortunately for Guitart and many of his men, they found themselves on the wrong end of the noose.
What is your sense of how much disruption these pirates caused? I mean, was it a nuisance, or was it actually stifling economic and development in the Chesapeake area?
I think more than anything, it was probably a nuisance. Primarily because the pirates actually helped the colonial economy in several ways. Because, of course, the colonists are dealing with embargoes at various points during certain conflicts. They're dealing with monopolies on certain products and goods. And so pirates were enabling them to get some of the goods that they might not otherwise have been able to obtain. And they also provided a bit of security against foreign incursions, particularly when the Royal Navy was otherwise preoccupied during conflict. So I would say that it didn't really stifle economic activity in the Chesapeake Bay, but it was probably quite a nuisance to certain merchants, particularly those who were not in support of pirates the way other merchants were.
Are there any aspects of the classic Long John Silver pirate myth that actually have any basis in the historical record that you've been able to find?
So by and large, most of those are, of course, the fiction of Treasure Island and Robert Louis Stevenson. But one of the most popular myths, of course, is that pirates bury their treasure. And for the most part, we find that they're not burying their treasure. They're, of course, spending their money as quickly as they can. And for the most part, pirates aren't actually stealing money. They're stealing goods and commodities that they can then sell to turn into money. So burying it makes no sense. But we do have evidence that Captain Kidd buried some of his treasure. So there's a little inkling of truth to that one.
I've been reading recently about lots of women pirates, or some women pirates, partly because they're now deeply in fashion with like young persons. My daughter is reading endless books about real historical women pirates. Are there any that you've come across in the Chesapeake?
Unfortunately, I did not really come across many women in the Chesapeake region, because of course Anne Bonny and Mary Read are the most famous, but they're really operating out of the Caribbean and the wider Atlantic. But there was one story during the Oyster Wars of the women of the Dancing Molly, which was a ship. And these women, their husbands were out pirating oysters, and they were left behind on the ship to sort of keep watch in case the governor came along to apprehend them. And in fact, the governor does come to apprehend the men, but because they're on the opposite shoreline, he has to go after the ship instead, not realizing that it's being manned by several women. And they're able to make their escape across to the other shoreline and basically out of the reach of the governor. And so that's one of my favorite stories from the book, is the women of the Dancing Molly outmaneuvering the Governor Cameron of Virginia.
I should have asked, when we're talking about cash crops and things, I mean, presumably the trade in enslaved people, particularly that part of the world with its slave plantations that forced slaves to work on them. Presumably that the trade in human flesh must have been as important as tobacco and sugar and things.
Absolutely. And pirates played an integral role in the slave trade, particularly throughout the Chesapeake Bay. They were more than happy to provide enslaved peoples as a commodity. You know, you had some pirates, I know that some have argued that pirates were very egalitarian, very equitable, and that they would free enslaved peoples and allow them to sort of do what they wished to the crew that had enslaved them. But there were plenty of instances of pirates who captured enslaved peoples and turned around and sold them to willing buyers.
How did Hitler's sexuality shape his worldview? Why did the Black Death lead to the rise of the witch trials? And what are some of the sauciest scandals involving kings and queens at Hampton Court? I don't know about you, but this is the history I want to hear about. If you do too, then join me, Kate Lister, every Tuesday and Friday to find out the answers to all of these questions and more. Listen to Betwixt the Sheets, the history of sex scandal in society, wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by History Hit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And I guess that's another point. I mean, if these parks, some of these parks are operating locally, is it a matter of there would have been places and customers for these stolen goods around the Chesapeake? So you're dashing out, you're stealing, and then you're selling to people kind of on the black market. There's a whole local economy going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I consider these, from my doctoral work on the piracy of the Atlantic world as a whole, I call these instances economies of opportunity. So where there are these little micro economies that develop in which pirates, because it's not really a black market the way we think of the black market today, but it is sort of an underground economic market that's being set up where pirates have willing buyers, willing fencers to sell their loot. So yeah.
And speaking of enslaved people, what about freed? We're reading more and more now about liberated people of African descent serving on, well, for, on the British side, particularly perhaps in the war of in the Revolutionary War. Were there any pirates of African descent operating in the Chesapeake?
There were, and primarily those of African descent are operating as privateers more than they are pirates, although we do have evidence. I don't have names, unfortunately, in the records. They were not named, but there was a group of three men who had escaped slavery and were pirating along the Chesapeake Bay. But probably one of the most famous men was a man named George R. Roberts, who served in the War of 1812. He was even one of the few defenders of Baltimore who had his portrait taken by a photographer. That's how important he was to the war effort. But he wasn't the only black Marylander in particular to serve. We have men like Percy Sullivan and Henry James, Charles Ball, Gabriel Rawlson, Caesar Wentworth. I mean, there's quite a large number of free blacks who are participating in the war effort as privateers.
I mean, it's so fascinating. Like, why do governments... I've always thought it would be kind of easy to clamp down on privateers, particularly in that area, because ships are kind of big and difficult to hide. I mean, you would have known... What efforts did the government go to, I mean, I guess there were kind of waves of persecution.
Yeah, it varied depending on the time and what's going on, but pirates really tended towards smaller vessels, more maneuverable. They could be manned by fewer people. And so it was a little bit easier to hide some of those ships than, say, you know, a Royal Naval vessel, for example. But in terms of prosecution, at least early on in early American history, there's not a lot of prosecution. There's a lot of pardons being meted out. And for the most part, the colonies are able to, at least initially, prosecute within their own courts. And so a lot of times, because they're local men being judged by locals, they're often let go. So after a while, the British government, of course, starts to put into effect laws that say if you're captured for piracy, you have to be tried in England, so that they couldn't get away with activities like that.
I mean, are many people transported to England and tried there? That's a huge deal.
Yeah, there were quite a few. And the king, that you could seek the king's pardon, but typically, if you were brought to England for prosecution, you were going to be found guilty and most likely hanged.
Yeah, I'll bet. We've got a question here from a History Hit subscriber. There's a Blackbeard's Point in Virginia. Is it that Blackbeard? Is it the pirate Blackbeard?
I believe so. I don't have exact confirmation on that, but I imagine because he was pretty... well known in those parts, that I think that it's named after Blackbeard.
Okay, so I've got a question that you are the right, you're the best person in the world to ask this question of. I actually don't really know who Blackbeard was. So did he exist? Is he like an actual, is he an actual person, is he? I've always assumed it's a kind of crazy story.
No, he was an actual person. And he wasn't as violent and as gruesome as people claimed he was, but he put on a persona of being very violent, and his entire look was quite menacing. So he was a rather large guy. He had, of course, his big, thick black beard, hence the name. And he would braid and twist lit fuses into the beard so that smoke would come out and he would look more terrifying. But one of my favorite stories about Blackbeard is that off the coast of South Carolina, his men were sick and dying. He was in really bad straits. And instead of stealing a merchant vessel, he saw a ship carrying some of the most prominent men from Charleston. So he seizes that ship, holding those men hostage, and basically tells the governor, either send me medicine or I'm going to kill some of your most prominent citizens. And so the governor, of course, is like, yes, here's some medicine. Just please let them go. And surprisingly, Blackbeard does let them go, but he still has a reputation to maintain. So he sends the men back to shore naked.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's okay. So Blackbeard deserves his evil reputation for that act alone. There are people on the live in the chat asking about Charles Wilson. In particular, Mark Vent is here, is a History Hit subscriber. You said pirates don't bury treasure, but there seems to be some excitement around some buried treasure here. What's going on?
Yeah, so Charlie Wilson, there's rumor that Charles Wilson buried some treasure in the Chesapeake Bay region. Legend has it that he had a hideout at Woody Knoll in Worcester County, Maryland. He also had a hideout at Assateague, but it was at Chincoteague that he reportedly buried this treasure, which would be worth perhaps $4 million today. I'll quote from a letter he wrote to his brother, which is where the rumors about the treasure come from. He writes this sort of riddle to his brother. There are three creeks lying 100 paces or more north of the second inlet above Chincoteague Island, Virginia, which is at the southward end of the peninsula. At the head of the third creek to the northward is a bluff facing the Atlantic Ocean with three cedar trees growing on it, each about 1 1/3 yards apart. Between the trees, I buried in 10 iron-bound chests, bars of silver, gold, diamonds, and jewels to the sum of 200,000 pounds sterling. Go to the Woody Knoll secretly and remove the treasure. But nobody's ever found Charles Wilson's treasure, despite all efforts.
Okay, listen, Jamie, you can be honest. Have you been to look for that treasure?
I have not, but I am quite tempted. $4 million.
You would know that better than anybody. All these weirdos looking for it. You've got the proper academic, you know, back. You've got it. You've done all the reading. People do look for it, do they?
They do.
The problem is those trees you mentioned, they're probably not going to be, they're not going to be there anymore. But I mean, I, you know, when History Hit is over, I'm just going to give my life. I'm just going to search for pirate treasure. That's so cool. Jamie, I'm just going to ask you a quick question. We've got Adrian Coles here. Where did pirates obtain their ships? If they captured them, were the existing crews forced to serve a new captain?
Yeah, so if they seized a ship in existence, then they typically either impressed the crew into their service or they would maroon them on the nearest island or location. So it was often better to go ahead and join the pirate crew just to be on the safe side. So yeah, otherwise, like I said, they had backers in a lot of cases from merchants. So they might have somebody who secretly buys them a ship. But more often than not, it's by commandeering a ship.
Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the podcast. What is your book called?
It's called Pirates of the Chesapeake Bay, From the Colonial Era to the Oyster Wars.
Thank you so much. That is just fascinating stuff. And it just reignites my, I haven't been to the Chesapeake since I was a kid and I just want to go back there and sail all over. It's just the best part of the world. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hi everyone, it's me, Dan Snow. Just a quick request. It's so annoying and I hate it when other podcasts do this, but now I'm doing it and I hate myself. Please, please go onto iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and give us a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps, basically boosts up the chart, which is good. And then more people listen, which is nice. So if you could do that, I'd be very grateful. I understand if you don't want to subscribe to my TV channel. I understand if you don't buy my calendar, but this is free. Come on, do me a favor. Thanks.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dan Snow's History It. Please follow this show wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us and you'll be doing us a big favour. Don't forget, you can also listen to all of these podcasts ad-free and watch hundreds of TV documentaries when you subscribe at historyhit.com/subscribe. As a special gift, you can also get your first 3 months for just £1 a month when you use code DANSNOW at checkout.